Thank you, and sorry for being so late. Since it was the last one before the summer break, everybody wanted to talk about a whole range of things. But mainly the two more important, as always, has been the situation in the Gaza war and the Ukrainian war. As always, we started the day by discussing Ukraine with Prime Minister Kuleba, connected online. When we went to the situation in the Middle East, we have an important exchange with the president of the European Investment Bank, Nadia Calviño. This lasted more than expected because member states were very much interested in knowing more from the new president of the EUID. But let me start with two important decisions which will strengthen our partnership with Armenia. First, we adopted the first ever assistance measure under the European Peace Facility for Armenia for around 10 million euros. And second, we gave green light to launch a visa liberalization dialogue with Armenia. These two decisions were long awaited by Armenia, and I'm very happy that this could be finally agreed before the summer break, because you know how the situation is tense in the Caucasus, and this will strengthen our partnership with Armenia. On Ukraine, nearly all ministers condemn the Russian missile attack against civilians and the recent attack against the children's hospital in Kyiv, which shows that Ukraine needs more air defense, and its defense is being required now. So we discuss and we review what we have been able to supply since this is the last month at the Washington meeting, and members of state consider the possibility of increasing its support to Ukraine in order to reject these criminal air attacks. The other problem was the energy infrastructure. This is an important point of the capacity of Ukraine to resist. There is a high percentage of Ukrainian electricity generation capacity that has been damaged or destroyed, or it is out of the territory controlled by the Ukrainian government. And this is happening in summer. You can imagine in winter. Putin wants to put Ukraine into the darkness and the cold. And that's why the coming 2 or 3 months will be crucial. And we don't have time to wait before the winter arrives. I asked ministers to start mobilizing now to provide more power generation capacities to Ukraine. Contributing to the Ukrainian Energy Support Fund is also needed. Then we went to our military support for Ukraine through the European Peace Facility. Most member states insisted on the need to leave the blockage for this payment pending for months, more than years or year. And at the same time, they stressed importance to move on regarding the decision to implement the new Ukrainian Assistance Fund, which has been blocked by one member state for more than 1 year. The member states insisted that this was something unacceptable, unbearable, but unhappily, the situation of blockage remains. On the windfall profit, I updated ministers on the progress towards the first transfer of 1.4 billion expected to happen at the beginning of August, next week. And we are set to finance the acquisition of priority military equipment, once again, air defense, once again, ammunition for artillery, and also, and this is new, procurement for the Ukrainian defense industry. So we are not going only to provide military support to Ukraine, but from Ukraine itself, which is certainly the most logical and efficient thing we can do. Then we discussed with Kuleba the next steps following the summit on peace in Switzerland and agreed that we have to do more to engage with global partners from across the world. This summit in Switzerland got good results, but this has to be improved. about 90 states who has agreed with the final statement of this meeting, but we have to continue reaching out to them in order to counter the Russia propaganda and to clarify and to explain everybody around the world what's going on in Russia, attack against Ukraine. To remind that there is an aggressor and an aggressed, that Ukraine is defending, and we are supporting Ukraine on defending itself. Sometimes this is not being explained, or sometimes it is even hide. No, let's tell the truth. Let's stress the position of the European Union, which is and remains, and has been for quite a long, to support the Zelensky's peace formula, which is the only peace plan in town, here in Brussels. The only peace plan that the European Union support. Let me say that again. Russia is the aggressor in violation of the United Nations Charter, and Ukraine the victim, exercising its fundamental right to self-defense. And there's nothing of hysteria about that. It's just telling the truth. The European Union policy is not a pro-war policy. We strongly rejected that. We analyzed the statements and the actions implemented by the Hungarian Prime Minister and the Foreign Affairs Minister of Hungary, and with one single exception, I can say that all member states, with one single exception, were very much critical about this behavior. It's Putin who is the war party. The only one who is pro-war is Putin, who is calling for the Ukraine partition and rendition as preconditions for any talks and any ceasefire. And he sends reminders every day in the form of thousands of missiles, drones, and glide bombs, and more military offensive. So if you want to talk about the war party, talk about Putin, not about the European Union. Putin is the pro-war party here. We want peace. No one wants peace more than the Ukrainians themselves. But for a fair and lasting peace that needs to preserve Ukraine's freedom and independence and ensure accountability for the many war crimes that has been happening since the war started. Any so-called peace mission that ignores these basic fundamentals is, at the end of the day, only benefiting Putin and will not bring peace. With a single exception, I think that all member states agreed on the need to work for peace, but on this basis. 25 member states criticized Hungary's action, also in light of its responsibilities as rotating presidency. And nearly all member states insisted on the need to keep unity.